You're listening to NBC Sports Radio, and this is Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio, where every day is game day.
Let's go get it.
1, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Now, here's your host, Mike Florio.
Welcome into this Friday edition. 2 days before the conference championship games is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Can I just pause for a second and say, I love this. I love this new show. Second week, I wasn't sure how this was all going to work out. 3-hour radio show on top of the other stuff that I do. We're wrapping up week number two. More and more affiliates all the time. Having a great time. Great interviews. Well, great answers, not necessarily great questions. Great guests lined up by Kristen Coleman and Rob Stats Guerrera. So hopefully we got a lot more weeks to go before somebody wakes up and realizes that I have no training, skill, or experience to do this. But until then, we'll keep doing it. Cowboys GM Jerry Jones had no skill or experience to be the GM once he bought the team. But hey, he bought the team. He can hire whoever he wants. He hired himself. He's done a pretty good job. Pro Football Writers Association named him the Executive of the Year. He was just merely a finalist at ProFootballTalk.com. We gave it to Cardinals GM Steve Keim. And it's going to test all of Jerry's skills coming up in free agency. Tough decisions to make. Running back DeMarco Murray, due to become a free agent. Receiver Dez Bryant, due to become a free agent. Franchise tag available, but there's only one that can be used. So what do? You try to sign, ideally, one guy to a long-term deal and use the franchise tag to the other. The best plan would be to sign Dez Bryant to a long-term contract and then use the franchise tag on DeMarco Murray, because it's cheaper to tag Murray. And Murray, at age 26, getting closer and closer to that witching hour for running backs where the wheels fall off, take it year to year. 2015 with Murray, and then maybe you let him leave after that. You make plans to replace him for 2016. Hard to let this guy walk away. But there's a problem. It's hard to sign Dez Bryant to a long-term contract. To his credit, Dez Bryant realizes that the ultra-long-term deal to which the Cowboys would like to sign him doesn't pay him a whole lot guaranteed. And it's not a two-way street. It's a one-way street. Bryant would be tied to the Cowboys. The Cowboys wouldn't be tied to him. Sign for 10 years. We can cut you anytime we'd like, but you're stuck with us. You can't leave. We can tell you to get out of here anytime we want. Dez resisting efforts by Jerry Jones to negotiate with him directly. That was happening in the offseason. Dez has resisted it and avoided it. And why not do the franchise tag? If they're not going to pay him market value, go year to year. $12 million for the franchise tag for Dez Bryant this year. It would be over $14 million for 2016. And by 2017, the number goes up so high, there's no way they'd keep him around. So go 2 more years with the Cowboys year to year, make about $26, $27 million, and then hit the open market if they're not going to give you $27 million or more fully guaranteed with the stroke of a pen. There's a wild card in all of this, though, and his name is Adrian Peterson. Maybe you could let both guys go if you can get Adrian Peterson and just draft another receiver at the bottom of round one. Plenty of young receivers showing they can come in and play football at a high level right away. Used to be first-round receivers, they'd never develop the first couple of years, maybe by year three, sometimes not at all. This year, you got a bunch of guys, Odell Beckham, Kelvin Benjamin, guys rolling in, Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins. You can replace Dez Bryant with a draft pick, and you get Adrian Peterson. Intriguing what the Cowboys are going to do. And I know a lot of people are poo-pooing the idea of Adrian Peterson at the Cowboys, but for me, the light bulb went on when DeMarco Murray complained about facing 8 and 9 men in the box the week that Tony Romo missed a game because of that fracture in his back. Well, Adrian Peterson's entire career has been 8 and 9 guys in the box, except for that year in Minnesota with Brett Favre, 2009. Other than that, he's been running into 8 and 9 man fronts all his life, at least in the NFL. Yeah, he's 30. He will be soon. I think his birthday's this month. If so, happy birthday, Adrian. But, yeah, Adrian Peterson, upgrade over DeMarco Murray. Gutsy move if Jerry Jones does it, but upgrade over DeMarco Murray. Interesting to see what happens with the Cowboys with those two key free agents, especially now that they have most of their coaches coming back. Bill Callahan leaving, not a big surprise. He was demoted last year anyway. Scott Linehan's back. Rod Marinelli's back. Jason Garrett's back. Colin Kaepernick will presumably be back in San Francisco this year, although the 49ers have until April 1 to make a decision on what they're going to do, because on April 1 is when his salary for 2015 becomes fully guaranteed. Until then, it's guaranteed for injury only. Last time I checked, the 49ers aren't playing any games, so no reason to worry about any injury. So they have full flexibility. And that was one of the issues hovering with the coaching search. Would a new coach want Colin Kaepernick, or how much of a chance will Kaepernick get? And the question is, how much will you use Kaepernick? Are you going to make him a pocket passer in the regular season and a dual threat in the postseason, or are you going to turn him loose? Here's new coach Jim Tom Sula talking about Kaepernick yesterday at his introductory press conference.
I think he can run. I think he can throw. I think he can change the pace of a game. Change the speed of a game. I think he's very intelligent. I think he can do a lot of things. You know, when I put it all together, he can do a lot of things with his feet. He can do a lot of things with his hands. He can do a lot of things with his arms. And he can do a lot of things with his eyes. And he can do a lot of things with his brain. And more so than a traditional quarterback, he does it with the lower body. And look at that. Corral it. And let's accentuate those things, and as we continue to strengthen other areas, you know, which we all have. I mean, every player on the field has that.
A couple of things I take away from that. First of all, it sure sounds like Jim Tom Sula is going to let Colin Kaepernick use his legs in the regular season. They're not going to wrap him in bubble wrap in the regular season. Not try to make him a pocket passer when he's so much better when he's able to do both things. And we've seen how he's so much better in the postseason when he's a running threat and a passing threat. So you can't worry about the guy getting injured. You hope that he knows how to protect himself, and otherwise you just go play football and you have a backup that basically can do the same things he does. And if he gets injured, you move on to the next guy. It's the next man up. Another thing about Tom Sula, first of all, I guess he's a head, shoulders, knees, and toes guy because he basically rattled off every body part that Colin Kaepernick has. But what a difference between Tom Sula and Jim Harbaugh. And I don't know if it's good, bad, or otherwise, but Jim Harbaugh always seemed like he was reading his words off of an invisible teleprompter where he would type them before he would say them so he could scan them to make sure there's nothing he's going to say that's going to be used against him. Tom Sula just got there and spoke. Is he going to be a good football coach? I don't know. But he seems a little more genuine, a little more engaging in the press conference setting because for Harbaugh, everything's a competition. He's got to win the press conference, and I think he lost sight of the big picture at times because it created a sense that it was too combative and it wasn't about really talking about the team. It was about sparring with reporters. Cardale Jones didn't do much sparring yesterday with reporters. That press conference, life-changing decision. What's your life-changing decision? Nothing. I'm going to change my life today. How are you going to change it? Not at all. I'm not doing a thing. And I've given Cardale Jones a hard time as time goes by, and I should have seen this coming. It wasn't his decision to have a press conference about nothing. Why have a press conference to announce that you're not doing anything? And I know people are saying that, oh, Peyton Manning did the same thing. And we talked about this on the program yesterday, about Peyton Manning's press conference about nothing. Different circumstances. Far different circumstances. Peyton Manning accomplished. It was presumed he was going to leave. I believe he had his degree, and he gave everybody a gift, and it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. With Cardale Jones, it was kind of like, he's like, well, what's the big deal? It's almost like they just kind of sucked him into the room from his apartment. And here he is. And he's like, why is everybody here? It's like a surprise party for Cardale Jones. Why is this a big deal? I'm not leaving. Why? What's happening here? So I think the people close to Cardale Jones who advised him to do this, I think they need to think twice about giving him advice like that in the future. And great lesson for Cardale Jones. He learned more yesterday, and he's going to learn in 2015 at The Ohio State University. Cardale Jones learned that other people's ideas ultimately stick to you if you're the one that goes ahead and implements them. And he's learning, I think, maybe the hard way, that it was somebody else's idea that put him in a weird situation. When you go back and look at that, he seemed uncomfortable. It seemed a little awkward. And at the end, he said, well, I don't know why this is a big deal. Well, he made it a big deal. And maybe the truth is people close to him urged him to make it a big deal. And you got to wonder if those people are also wrong about the advice they gave him about staying in school for one more year. When we return, Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to get us ready for the NFC Championship game, Packers at Seahawks, in case you haven't heard. Later in the program, MDS to talk some picks for the coming weekend. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to Sean King. We'll talk to Bob Kravitz. We'll talk to Hall of Famer Warren Moon, who handles the Seahawks radio broadcast. A lot coming up. Stay with us for as much of the next 3 hours as you can, and hopefully for all of it. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
Yeah, we have confidence that we can win on the road, and it's a tough environment. You know, we split our games on the road this year. Played up there in week one. It's a great environment to play in. It's loud. They're a great defense. It's going to be a great test. But the winner gets to play for it all.
That's Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers as he hops around on one leg. He's the human pogo stick with that calf muscle. How much will it affect him coming up this week? And there's one way to find out, other than talking directly to Aaron Rodgers, not as if he'd tell us. Let's talk to Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Seattle, already in Seattle, been in Seattle all week. Tyler, why have you been in Seattle all week? And I hope it's not because you wanted to sample some of the products out there that are now legal, although it's perfectly legal if you choose to do that.
Not my thing, Mike. Not my thing. Have drank a lot of coffee and listened to a lot of grunge, though. So we've got those bases covered here. It's a big game, so figure get out here for the full week and get that Seahawks perspective. And I tell you what, it's a very, very confident group out here. I can't say that enough.
And for good reason. The Seahawks typically don't lose at home. As the stakes get higher, they don't lose, and they handled the Packers, by 20 points way back in week one. Is there any reason to expect a different outcome this time around?
I think so. I mean, I think that what gives Green Bay a real fighting chance here is the offensive line, and it's a different group. It's a group that can brawl. It's a group that can move the ball on third and one. And, I mean, you look at that Dallas game, you know, when you had that little scrum on the sideline. I know they, you know, lost 15 yards. They lost 4 points. It was a really big play to have T.J. Lang kind of take out a guy. But, you know, that kind of scrum isn't what you've seen around here very often. And that kind of attitude is what you have to bring to Seattle. If you're going to get into this octagon with this team, you better be, you know, you can't just bring a knife to a gunfight. And I think in that sense, it is a different Packer team. And Derek Sherrod won't be on the field. So, that being said, it's going to be very difficult because Seattle's a lot better themselves.
He's Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And to further your metaphor, the Packers are bringing a gun, but it's missing some bullets in Aaron Rodgers. I look at Aaron Rodgers, I look at how he moved or didn't move against the Cowboys, and I say, boy, he's almost as immobile as Peyton Manning, and we saw what happened to Peyton Manning in Super Bowl 48 against the Seahawks defense. How can Aaron Rodgers move the ball against that defense without two fully functioning legs?
He's going to have time. I mean, they have to give him time in the pocket between the tackles, which isn't easy against this Seattle front. And it's not easy when you don't have many passing windows open on the back end. I mean, as everybody knows, the Legion of Boom, it's just different. They know what you're doing before you do it most of the time. So in that sense, it's going to be tough. And, you know, we'll see how much he can move. He was able to move more throughout that Dallas game. He shuffled a little better to his left on a couple of those big throws. So that is a promising sign. But as you know, with that calf injury, the only thing that can really help it heal is time. And that's one thing that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have right now. They're going to have to be able to run the ball and give him an extra second to fit a pass into a tight window.
He's Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And running the ball is a little easier when your starting running back is healthy. But Eddie Lacy has a knee problem. He had an asthma attack last weekend against the Cowboys. He had one during the 2013 regular season. How big of a concern is either of those two conditions?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like they had a little scare there this week with the knee injury, but he should be able to play. And as far as the asthma goes, I mean, at least he's not going to be in 0 degrees and it's not going to be snowing and cold and frigid and all that. So I guess that helps with that. I don't have asthma myself, but I imagine it helps to some degree. You know, beyond all that, this is a healthier running back than what they had last year in the postseason. You know, he had that ankle sprain. He was trying to grit through that. He wasn't the same running back. But we're now mixing in some James Starks and keeping defenses off balance, running pass. He is fresher in that regard, and they're going to need him to be fresh. And I think Mike Bennett kind of put it best this week in the locker room. He kind of pointed to a bigger reporter at his locker and said, hey, he's kind of built like you. He's a little overweight, so it's going to be a challenge.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, Tyler, because we were watching the game on Sunday. And, the guy's got a gut. What do the Packers feel about a running back who looks like a guy who really isn't in all that great a shape?
He is a big boy, and I think he's listed at 230. He's not 230. He's got to be in that 240 range. And what they say repeatedly is they like him at this size. They like him at this weight because he does move well. Is he somebody that's going to find that fifth gear in the open field? No. And I mean, a lot of the linemen in Green Bay, they kind of joke around with that too. He's not going to find that gear. But at this size, he's still a handful to deal with. He can still move pretty well. I mean, he's pretty shifty. He can avoid a lot of big-time hits for his size. So I think they kind of like the fact that he's bigger, even if it's not all muscle.
He's Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I always love the graphics on TV where, you know, the high-tech listing of the various position groups and categories, and you check the boxes for each team. If we would do that with Packers, Seahawks, what area or areas would the Packers have an advantage over Seattle?
Good question. You know, I think the strength for this team right now is the offensive line, and that's kind of strength meets strength with their defensive line. I don't know if they have the advantage there. You know, one area where they are a lot better that maybe people aren't talking a lot about, these cornerbacks are playing well. I think, yeah, Clay Matthews has helped the run defense, and Sam Berenson playing a large role has definitely helped. But the ability for Tremont Williams and Sam Shields to hold up in one-on-one has allowed Morgan Burnett to drop down in the box, has allowed Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to do different things. So they're going to need to do that, obviously, against Seattle. They don't really have that 6'5 stud at wide receiver. So if Green Bay can just stay in one-on-one coverage, maybe they can do different things on defense up front to disrupt Russell Wilson, who, I mean, as you know, I mean, the offense kind of runs through him now.
He's Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Been in Seattle for the last 3 days. Give me one thing you've learned about the Seahawks you didn't know before you went out there.
One thing would say, you know what? I did know this, but not to this degree. Very loose football team. You know, very, very loose. Obviously, Pete Carroll, as coach, he wants these guys to be themselves. That they draft, you know, personalities, and he wants them to be themselves, to be comfortable in their own skin. And that's why you just see so much confidence from these guys. I mean, basically, in so many words, they tell you, we're going to kick butt, and we don't care who hears it, and they usually back it up. They're kind of doing that again this week, whether it's Bobby Wagner, whether it's, you know, Earl Thomas, whether it's Bruce Irvin. Everybody on this defense is very, very confident, and it's hard to tell there's even an NFC Championship game being played here. They're not nervous at all. You can't see it anywhere.
Final minute or two with Tyler Dunn of Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Give me one guy other than quarterback Aaron Rodgers or running back Eddie Lacy who's going to need to step up in a big way to help the Packers get a victory.
Let's go with Devontae Adams, and he barely played at all in that week one game. He was still behind Jarrett Boykin. So now he steps into that role. He's going to be lined up against Richard Sherman at times. Maybe they do dictate the action a little bit more with Randall Cobb, with Jordy Nelson, and try to move those guys around. But even if Adams is over there, there's got to be a point in this game where they pay attention to that side of the field. Otherwise, you'll just see Earl Thomas tilt to the other direction, and it will be a game that you saw in week one. They have to somehow dictate the action, similar to what they did against New England with Revis and Browner by moving players around. But yeah, Devontae Adams is a guy, you know, they called him Baby Megatron back in Fresno State. I don't know if he has to be Megatron, but they're going to need a player or two out of him probably.
Well, Tyler, thanks as always for some of your time. And if you do purchase any of the substances that are currently legal in the state of Washington, just remember, don't bring any of them back to Wisconsin.
No worries here. Well, as a Wisconsin guy, I'll just stick to the beer. No, although it can't
all right.
Be New Glarus. Got to put the plug in there.
All right, good deal. There he is, Tyler Dunn, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, as we continue to move through hour number one of the program. Next up, it's pick time with MDS, conference championship games. Who's going to win? Pick the upsets at your own peril. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. It's PFT Picks time for the conference championship weekend. Last week, MDS and I were each 3-1. I trusted the Cowboys. He trusted the Broncos. Those were our two mistakes. He's up by two with three games left in the postseason. Maybe we should add the Pro Bowl. You know what? It really doesn't matter at this point because we agree on both games this weekend. Surprise, surprise. Let's bring him in now. MDS, welcome to the program. Congratulations, I guess. You've officially clinched the postseason contest based on 11 games, although I won the regular season contest based on 256.
I have beaten you every single year we have done this in the playoffs, and this year is no different.
How many years have we been doing this?
I think this is our third year of picking the games and my third postseason of defeating you.
Isn't it more meaningful, though, to win the 256-game contest than just this little sprint? It's like it's not even a 100-yard dash. It's a 45-yard dash. I'm not really impressed by that.
They don't hang championship banners or giving out rings for the regular season. I'll take the playoff.
All right, well, let's take the first game up this weekend. Packers at Seahawks, NFC championship game. Surprise, surprise. Even though Aaron Rodgers, Eddie Lacy, both officially probable, the injury report is now out. Surprise, surprise. We both like the home team. Give me why you like the Seahawks.
Well, I have to admit that I picked the Packers to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season, so maybe you could say I'm being inconsistent now when the Packers are on the doorstep to pick against them. But I just think the Seahawks are the best team in the NFL. I think they have been, in fact, since week one when they beat the Packers. They had a little bit of a lull there in the middle of the season, but when you look at how their defense is playing and also how Russell Wilson is playing, you know, Russell Wilson's passer rating in that game against Carolina was the highest of any quarterback in a playoff game in the last 5 years. They're playing really good football right now, and I just don't see the Packers beating them. I like the Seahawks, and I like them to win fairly comfortably.
Yeah, incredible performance from Russell Wilson, 149.2 passer rating. His price tag keeps going up and up as he moves toward a second Super Bowl win in three seasons. Look, Seahawks at home, tough to beat under any set of circumstances, even tougher as the stakes get higher and higher. The Panthers played them very well last Saturday night, but there's just this sense of inevitability that at some point the dam is going to break. There's too much pressure. There's too much noise. There's too much stress for the opposition. You've got Aaron Rodgers on a pogo stick. You've got Eddie Lacy with his knee banged up. I don't think the Packers can do enough to stay even with a Seahawks team that has a great defense, possibly underrated defense, extremely underrated offense, and the Seahawks put it all together. But I am going to take issue because I have a problem with the idea that you pick the Packers to get to the Super Bowl before the season starts, and here they are in the NFC Championship game, and you're not picking the Packers to win. That is inconsistent. That is unfair. I picked the Seahawks to make it to the Super Bowl. Seahawks, Patriots. I could not in good conscience change my pick, and how dare you, MDS?
I dare. I can, in fact, in good conscience, change my mind, and I can feel very good either way because, hey, if the Seahawks win, I say, look, I beat Florio in that postseason picks contest, and if the Packers win, all week when you and I are in Phoenix, I'm going to be reminding everybody, hey, I'm not surprised the Packers are in the Super Bowl. I picked them before the season, so either way, I look pretty good.
And I'll remind you all week long that you picked the Packers to lose in the NFC Championship game. He's Michael David Smith of ProFootballTalk.com. We do the weekly picks segment here on PFT Live. Let's go to the AFC. Colts-Broncos, familiar matchup. Colts-Broncos. Colts-Patriots, familiar matchup. Who do you like?
Yeah, easy for you to say. I like the Patriots. I think Andrew Luck took a big step toward really establishing himself as that next great NFL quarterback. But I also have to say, I just don't think the Colts have a lot around Andrew Luck. And in fact, I actually think Andrew Luck might even be underappreciated because the Colts don't have a lot around him. I think that when you talk about Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, I think, is getting more credit because the Seahawks have a better team around him. And what I think we're going to see on Sunday in New England is exactly that the Colts just don't have enough from top to bottom, 1 to 53 on their roster, to beat a really good team like the Patriots. I think this year might go down as one of the best years Bill Belichick has had as a coach. We remember back to that loss to Kansas City where everybody was saying, boy, the Patriots are finished. And Bill Belichick just said, on to Cincinnati, and he just said, do your job, and he spouted all of his cliches, and you know what? It worked, and the Patriots have been playing great football since then, and I really think that the Patriots are going to continue to play great football on Sunday, and they're going to beat the Colts, I think beat them comfortably.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, and even though the Patriots only mustered 14 rushing yards last weekend against the Baltimore Ravens, Look at what the Patriots have done to the Colts the last 2 years. 166 and four touchdowns from LeGarrette Blount in the postseason last year. 201 from Jonas Gray and four touchdowns in the regular season this year. I think Bill Belichick's attitude is simple. We're going to keep running the football until you stop us. And you're going to have to load up so much to stop us, we will dissect you in the passing game. So go ahead. Try to take away the run. Please, we dare you. Try to take away the run. And if you do, then we're going to torch you down the field. I think Chuck Pagano, good enough of a coach to come up with a game plan that maybe would work, but he lacks the personnel. And if the Colts want to punch through, and they've made it through to their credit, they've made it to the Final Four, you want to get past the Patriots, you had better come up with a way to stop that running game. And the Patriots are going to keep doing it, and they're going to keep doing it, and I think they're going to win comfortably. Although I was trying to justify taking the Colts, but I can't. I picked the Patriots and the Seahawks. I can't say that enough. I picked the Patriots and the Seahawks to make it to the Super Bowl before the season. So, reluctantly, I had to stick with the teams that were 7-point favorites this time around. All right, MDS, we'll see you out in Arizona in about 10 days as we get rolling for the Super Bowl. Good luck this weekend since we agree on the same two picks, and safe travels.
Same to you, buddy. I think I may see you next at the Pro Bowl, something that will be kind of interesting. Most people don't care about the Pro Bowl, but we will be there covering it live for PFT.
All right. Well, you know what? Now that I think about it, I'm only two games behind him in the picks. Maybe we should, since we're both going to be at the Pro Bowl, maybe we should make the Pro Bowl part of the contest. And if we disagree on that, not that anybody out there even cares about our stupid little contest. Does anyone care? Do you care? You can call and tell us if you care, or if you don't care. Chances are you don't care. 855-3234-NBC. Coming up next, we will answer your questions via Twitter and via phone. That number again, 855-3234-NBC. We'll be back with more. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio is built by the Home Depot. Let's update our essentials. The Home Depot can help you with big savings on brand name appliances you trust, like GE, Maytag, LG, Frigidaire, and Whirlpool. Saving on appliances has never been easier with the Home Depot's free haul away and delivery. Just pick out the latest models from top brands and let the Home Depot take care of the rest. Visit homedepot.com/appliances for details. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. And here's where I say the power of Twitter is that we can ask for tweets, and you will ask us questions, and we will give you answers. So let's do that, because we always do that, or at least typically do that in this segment of the program. First one comes from @AtlasAdvisors, who wants to know, if the Final Four NFL playoff quarterbacks were all in the upcoming NFL draft, how would you rank them and why? That is a very good question. Now, I'm going to assume that they're entering the draft at their current ages, because I think that's a big factor. And when we take that into full consideration, I would take Aaron Rodgers, even though he's on the wrong side of 30, because he's far and away, I believe, the best quarterback in the NFL right now, and he proved it last week by getting it done on one leg. Next up, it gets a little tougher. I've been a big Russell Wilson fan. I'm probably going to stick with Russell Wilson, although at times I err on the side of Andrew Luck because he doesn't have a Super Bowl ring yet, and maybe he's a little hungrier. But if they're entering the NFL right now, I want Russell Wilson because of his calm demeanor, because of his incredible athleticism. He reminds me so much of Barry Sanders as a runner because he knows how to avoid contact and he knows how to protect himself. He is the best dual threat quarterback in the NFL right now, and he doesn't get nearly enough credit for that. Then Andrew Luck, and sorry, #Tommy, bringing up the rear because of the fact that he's on the wrong side of 37 and not as good as he used to be, but used to be very, very good. Another Twitter question from our good friend from across the pond @AredZoneAlk. Quarterbacks aside, is anyone more important to his team's chances of winning the Super Bowl than Rob Gronkowski? Probably not. Not for this weekend. Because the Patriots don't need Rob Gronkowski to advance to the Super Bowl because all they need is a running game. Just keep doing what they've been doing against the Colts and they should beat the Colts easily. It gets more interesting next level. And yes, you need Rob Gronkowski. And that has been the problem for the Patriots the past couple of years. In 2012, when Gronkowski was unavailable due to the multiple arm injuries and failed surgeries and staph infections, they couldn't beat the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship game. In 2011, when Gronkowski was injured in the AFC title game against Baltimore, it wasn't the same guy in the Super Bowl, wasn't able to get it done as a team. And then last year, Gronk had the torn ACL, and the Patriots were no match for the Broncos in the AFC title game. So he's the guy. Good call, a Red Zone Alk, our good friend who always can be relied upon for a question. Chris in Canada, you're on PFT Live.
Thanks for taking my call. My question, growing up a huge Lions fan, I really feel like we took a step forward this year. I'm hesitant to say it, but I feel we did. My big concern is I believe Ndamukong Suh is we got to keep him. And with what happened with what transpired this year, Megatron going down, I think we proved we can win without him. I know that sounds crazy, but his cap hit going forward, is there any traction to, you know, maybe cutting a guy like Megatron to keep Ndamukong Suh, which I feel is the key to that defense around?
You know, that's a great point, Chris, and thank you for your call. And I think the seeds of what possibly could happen were planted last year when in the run-up to the draft, what were we hearing? Lions interested in moving up from number 10 to get Mike Evans or get Sammy Watkins. And then what did they do with that 10th overall pick? They didn't take Aaron Donald, defensive tackle, who could have replaced Ndamukong Suh. They took Eric Ebron, who they believe will develop into a Jimmy Graham-type weapon in that offense. He hasn't yet. But Joe Lombardi, offensive coordinator, came from New Orleans, knows the power of having that guy who can create havoc out of the slot. You just get the feeling they're bracing for life without Calvin Johnson. So one way to keep Ndamukong Suh is to move on from Calvin Johnson, whose cap number will be $20 million this year. When Martin Mayhew, the GM of the Packers, said that the team may use the franchise tag on Suh, that's $26.8 million. You've got $20 million on the salary cap next year for Johnson. You've got $17 million on the salary cap next year for quarterback Matthew Stafford. All three guys arrived in the top two of the draft before the rookie wage scale. The Lions, and look, it's really not their fault. They've done what they can to keep these guys as long as possible, but at a certain point, you may have to let one of them go. Could be Suh, could be Calvin Johnson. And between the two guys, when you consider where the team is right now, and you consider the team did all right when Calvin Johnson wasn't able to play due to injury, if you have to choose between one of those two guys, maybe this is something we need to post at profootballtalk.com and put it out to a vote. Now, we can't limit it to Lions fans because we don't have the technology. But would you rather have Ndamukong Suh or would you rather have Calvin Johnson? If you had to choose between the two, Lions fans, call us. You can call us. You don't have to wait for me to take the time to post a story at my website. 855-3234-NBC. Call right now if you want to. In the interim, we'll see what our good friend C. Crawl has to say. If the NFL keeps talking about how badly they want a team in L.A., then why would they try to deny the Rams? Boy, that's a great point. And that just kind of cuts to the heart of this. We want to be in L.A., but we don't want the Rams to go there. Here's the problem. The NFL has shifted over the last year from treating L.A. as a luxury to treating it as a necessity because there are three teams, Rams, Chargers, Raiders, who all have bad stadium situations. They haven't been able to use the threat of a move to L.A. as the leverage to fix their stadium problems. So, after 20 years of L.A. becoming and being the vehicle to get new stadiums, whether it's Minnesota or anywhere else, now we need to do something about this. We need to get out of these cities, and somebody's going to squat on L.A. And there's a procedure that the NFL wants to follow. L.A. could make more sense for the Chargers to move up the road than dragging a team over from St. Louis, but that's a big part of it. I think now you've got multiple teams that want to be there. The NFL wants to make the right choices to team and also the right team, the right stadium, the right choice, the right everything. Let's squeeze in one more quick phone call. Edgar in New York, you're on PFT Live. No, Edgar's not there. Let's take a question from Twitter at AVJohn. Shouldn't it be a concern for Chicago that Fox couldn't win with Manning? Why not give a shot to someone else? Look, Fox won with Tim Tebow. John Fox won a playoff game with Tim Tebow. For that alone, John Fox should have a bust in Canton. Without retiring, without waiting 5 years, he won a playoff game with Tim Tebow. He was successful in Carolina with Jake Delhomme, whose career in many ways was, I don't know if it was smoke and mirrors, but it all went up in smoke in the 2008 divisional round. John Fox has won without great quarterbacks. Now, did he win a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning? No. Peyton Manning's only won one Super Bowl. It's not like Tom Brady was signed by the Denver Broncos 3 years ago. Peyton Manning, with a history of losing in big games. Sorry, but it's true. He's now been around long enough that we can say this isn't a fluke. He's got a history of losing in big games. And that's what's happened the last 3 years for Peyton Manning in Denver. I continue to be concerned by this new trend where it's not good enough to be in contention. You've got to win Super Bowls or else. If that was the standard, there'd be 31 new head coaches every year. There's only one team's going to win the Super Bowl. Don't you want to be on the doorstep every year? Eventually, you're going to kick in the door if you're within leg range of the door. You got most of the teams out there flopping around in the front yard. They can't even get up to the porch. But suddenly, it's not good enough to be in contention. Suddenly, it's not good enough to be knocking on the door every year. Be good enough for me. Good coaches are hard to come by when you have one. You need to find a way to keep them. Good first hour of the program. Maybe, maybe not. We'll let you decide. If you keep listening, that means it was good. And if you keep listening, you'll hear guys like Sean King and Warren Moon coming up. Bob Kravitz also. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
You got to win your matchups, you know, across the board, offense, defense, special teams. No matter who, you know, what they decide to do, it's going to come down to the one-on-one matchups.
That's Colts head coach Chuck Pagano, third season with the team, first appearance in the AFC Championship game since the Peyton Manning era. Can the Colts get past the Patriots? For a while, it was Colts, Patriots. It was like 49ers, Cowboys back in the 90s. Now, different quarterback. Andrew Luck in, Peyton Manning out. Colts sent Peyton Manning out of the postseason 5 days ago. Can Chuck Pagano engineer enough favorable one-on-one matchups to propel his team past the Patriots? History, at least recent history, tells us that he can't because the Patriots have blown out, sir, the Colts in the playoffs last year, in the regular season this year, 42-20 at Indianapolis in prime time. 201 rushing yards for previously unknown Jonas Gray, 4 touchdowns, and then last year in the postseason, 166 rushing yards for LeGarrette Blount and 4 more touchdowns. So can the Colts stop the Patriots' run game? Let's start right there with Bob Kravitz of WTHR in Indiana. Bob, can the Colts stop the Patriots from running the ball down their throats over and over and over again?
I think they're in better shape to do it, and I think Art Jones helps them a lot along those lines. He's when he's been in there, the running game has not been what it was that we saw against New England. I think Laron Landry coming back off a suspension and losing his job, he's been really good in the box, stopping the running game. He still has trouble in coverage, but I think those two guys and I think Jonathan Newsom, who's really come on as a pass rusher, as an outside linebacker, gives them an improved presence at that position. But I think it's pretty likely. The conventional wisdom suggests that they're going to try to do it all over again.
Yeah, he's Bob Kravitz of WTHR in Indianapolis, and the chess match. And Bill Belichick is the master of this. Take away what the other team's offense does best, force them to do something they can't do. And the problem is, if the Colts take away the run, then you've got to deal with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. If the Colts are able to stop the run and force the Patriots to pass, can the Colts stop them through the air?
They do have a very good secondary. Vontae Davis is a Pro Bowler and has played spectacular football most of the year. Greg Kohler has stayed healthy. He's been very good. Darius Butler, their nickel corner, has been very good. The big question is Gronkowski, and you know the way they work the middle of the field. It's still not clear to me whether they're going to use Jarrell Freeman on him or Laron Landry, or just play quarters coverage and try and deal with him that way. But I wouldn't be terribly confident that they can do a lot through the air with their outside receivers. But Gronkowski is just a beast, and he's a matchup nightmare.
He's Bob Kravitz of WTHR. Last week at this time, the buzz was that Trent Richardson would be relegated to special teams. That's how far he'd fallen down the running back depth chart. He ended up being inactive, falling even one step farther. Will he play this weekend against the Patriots?
I get the sense that he's not going to play. Especially with Josh McNary's situation, they needed another guy on special teams. Richardson has not shown what they wanted to see on special teams. Now, that may have changed in the last couple of days, but, you know, based on last week, they felt more comfortable with a guy named Mike Hill, who they just brought in off the streets just 2 or 3 days earlier. So I think the decline and fall of Trent Richardson will continue in this game.
Will Trent Richardson be back next year? He's got one more year on his rookie contract. It's fully guaranteed. What do the Colts do with him?
I tend to doubt they bring him back. I think, you know, he claims that the weight is not an issue, but just looking at the guy, he looks significantly bigger to me, and not in a good way. You know, looks like he's working the same diet that I'm working, which is mostly pizza and beer. I tend to think that he won't be back. You know, I don't know what they're going to do with Ballard. I don't know what they're going to do with Bradshaw. I got to think they're going to move in another direction. I just think it's been a complete bust, and, you know, I think they've acknowledged that to some degree.
He's Bob Kravitz of WTHR. Let's look back to last Sunday for a second. Was that more about the Colts, or was that more about the Broncos that resulted in the Colts getting to the Final Four?
I'm going to weasel out of this and say a little bit of both. I mean, clearly Peyton Manning wasn't right. And, you know, that was brought up in the Colts locker room this week, and they chafed at that notion. Well, if he was out there, you know, playing, then he was healthy enough. But, anybody who's watched him play the last, whatever, 13, 14 years knows that that was not Peyton Manning. That was a ghost of Peyton Manning. But I think that, you know, I mean, the Colts were terrific against the run. They kept C.J. Anderson under wraps. They got a good pass rush. And they were terrific in the secondary. That was as good as well as I've seen the secondary play really since the last time they faced the Broncos, or when they faced them last year and beat them in Indianapolis.
He's Bob Kravitz, WTHR. You mentioned the ghost of Peyton Manning. Will it be the ghost of Peyton Manning future in 2015? Do you think he'll play? And if not for the Broncos, would he go somewhere else?
I think it would have to be with the Broncos. I think he's going to come back and do one more year. That's not based on any inside information. That's just a guess on my part. But I think he's going to ask himself the question, was my decline due to old age, or was it the thigh tear or strain or whatever they're saying it is now? And I have the feeling that he's going to say, look, I can rehab from this just the way I rehab from my neck. I'd come back, you know, better next year. I just don't think he wants to go out on that note that you know, I think it's going to leave a sour taste, and I think he'll come back for another season at least.
And that's a great point, Bob. Tony Dungy's been saying the same thing all week. Peyton Manning's not going to want to go out on that note. We'll let you go out on this note. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Very good. Thanks, Mike.
There he is, Bob Kravitz, WTHR. And, yeah, Peyton's coming back. DeMarcus Ware said that he talked to Peyton. He's gotten the impression he's coming back. So who knows? We're coming back after this. Later in the hour, Sean King will join us to talk about Cardale Jones' decision. Plenty of stuff going on. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
I've been talking over to my family, my friends, my coaching staff. I'm going to return next year for school. You know, I mean, it's everybody's dream and goal, you know, when they play football or any collegiate sport to make it to the next level. But in my point in my career, I feel like, you know, it's the best for me to go back to school. And one of the most important things for me to do is to graduate.
That's current Ohio State quarterback Cardale Jones. May not even be the starter in 2015. He's sticking around for at least one more season in Columbus. Joining us now to help us understand the decision. Was it right? Was it wrong? My good friend, former Buccaneers quarterback, former Cardinals quarterback, former Tulane Green Wave quarterback, now with Yahoo Sports, Sean King. Sean, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Cardale Jones, should he be feeling great about his decision from yesterday?
I think you should. You know, it's a unique situation because it doesn't really happen as it pertains to the NFL. I mean, we see this with the NBA every year. You know, where kids who maybe aren't ready are still selected really high. But to be honest, Mike, I don't know if there was a wrong answer. You know, it was his decision to make, and as long as he's comfortable with it, I mean, you can make an argument for either side that a reasonable person probably would say, you know, that makes sense.
Well, Sean, I saw something you posted last night on Yahoo Sports. It suggested, at least in the aftermath of the decision, you thought he'd made a mistake.
I did, and that was based on what I would have done. And I would have turned pro. The reason being, you go to college to play football in the hopes that you can one day reach your dream of being an NFL football player, And I thought because the pool of quarterbacks in this particular draft is very thin, and because of his measurables, the floor for Cardale, Mike, in my opinion, is going to be the third round. And I think in a perfect world, if he really aced the draft process, he could have, you know, moved himself up as a late first-round pick. And I just don't know that going back to Ohio State is going to change that, especially understanding the situation at quarterback as it sits. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Cardale actually committed to Trussell initially. So on that roster, J.T. Barrett's the only quarterback that Urban Meyer actually recruited through the whole process.
He's Sean King, formerly of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, now with Yahoo Sports. How much can we tell about Cardale Jones based on three games?
I think not a lot, and I think that's what really worried the NFL, and I think that's why you heard a lot of NFL personnel, you know, people in positions of power say he needed to go back to school. It was going to be an uncomfortable decision for them, but I still think it's one they were going to make, you know, and I still go back to this, and I would have left simply because of this, Mike. If you could choose to develop and get better the next 2 years, why not do it and get compensated and paid for it?
Now, what happens next year if he plays and there's more tape out there and defenses do a better job against him and he gets exposed and he falls down the draft board? Is that a concern he should have coming back?
Absolutely. And I think the reason it should be a concern is because of the presence of J.T. Barrett, who before he got injured, a lot of people, you know, thought he was having a Heisman Trophy-like season. And if, you know, for some reason Cardale doesn't play well in two consecutive games next year, or if they lose an early season game, how long of a rope is he going to have before they decide to move on to another quarterback? You know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on him to perform at a high level every week, even if he's the starter.
He's Sean King of Yahoo Sports, formerly Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback. And it was 16 years ago. Was it 16 years ago? No, 15 years ago. I don't want to make you any older than you are. That you were preparing to take the Buccaneers into the NFC Championship game against the Rams. How were you feeling a day or two before that game?
I actually was fine. And, you know, it's weird. I think sometimes you can be so inexperienced and just so full of confidence that you don't even understand the magnitude of the moment. And, you know, that's sort of the zone that I was in. And looking back on it, I probably should have been a little more nervous than I was, but I wasn't. But, you know, I looked at it as a great opportunity, you know, one where I kind of introduced myself, you know, to the world, you know, as a rookie quarterback in Tampa. The game didn't quite go as I had planned it, but I wasn't really nervous coming into it.
Hey, Sean, how much of that, though, was the presence of Coach Dungy, who I think would do a great job keeping anyone from getting too keyed up before a game?
A lot of it was. You know, a lot of it was, you know, I had so much confidence in the guys around me as well. And, you know, for whatever reason, Mike, I don't know if it was ego. You know, I don't know if it was just, you know, me being, you know, playing dumb. I just didn't look at it like it was pressure. You know, I always looked at it like, you know, this is an opportunity, you know, to go out and really have a great game in front of everybody. So, you know, we internalize and compartmentalize things different ways. And for me, it was always, you know, in a positive reinforcement kind of way.
And the Buccaneers did a heck of a job that game against the St. Louis Rams, 11-6 final score. And you will always be known as the answer to the trivia question of who threw the pass that resulted in the change in the rules that gave us this confusion over what is and what isn't a catch, because it was your throw to Bert Emanuel that touched the ground, that was ruled incomplete. They changed the rules so the ball can touch the ground, and now nobody knows what a catch is or isn't if the ball happens to touch the ground.
I agree with you 100%. No one knows what a catch or a catch is or isn't. No one knows what defensive pass interference is or isn't. I mean, NFL, I agree, they need to do a better job of clarifying with their officials what needs to be called and what doesn't need to be called. And I understand how Detroit feels, and I understand how Dallas feels. You know, it doesn't do you any good for the NFL to come out the week after you lose a game because of a call and say that we made the wrong call.
Last minute or so with Sean King of Yahoo Sports, formerly the Buccaneers, Cardinals, Tulane Green Wave. Are you a Marcus Mariota or a Jameis Winston guy, or both, or neither?
I'm a fan of both, Mike, but I think only one is ready to play year one, and that's Jameis Winston. I think he's the better prospect. I think he'll have the better NFL career. But I do think if Marcus Mariota is allowed to go somewhere and actually develop, you know, he has a chance to be special as well. You know, but go back to Blake Bortles last year, Mike. What did Jacksonville say when they selected him? he's not going to play the first year. We're going to sit him. We're going to let him develop. But when you pick a high in the first round and you take a quarterback, it's because you don't have one. And when you select a guy, no matter what you say, you're probably going to have to play him in year one. And they might have ruined Bortles, and I think if Mariota's asked to play in year one, it could be to his detriment as well.
Does it make sense for the Eagles to do whatever they have to do to go get him because his Oregon coach, Chip Kelly, is the coach in Philly?
I don't think so because of what they would have to give up, you know, to move from where they're at, if I'm not mistaken, which is the early 20s, up until you would have to assume they'd have to try and get to one or two. And I don't know if they're good enough to say we can give up probably our entire draft and some of the draft next year to get a quarterback.
Sean, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you taking some time to join us. I will be pestering you again, especially as the draft approaches. Thanks.
All right.
Sean King, Yahoo Sports. Just a great guy. We did some work with him on NBCSN in recent years. Just a lot of fun to be around. Very gregarious, funny, funny guy. And he can give it and he can take it. And he'll take it well. And he'll give it very well. When he gets you on the run, it's hard to get away when he start making good points, and he's got strong opinions about quarterbacks. So as we get closer and closer to the draft and more names emerge, we'll get Sean's opinion on some of these quarterbacks. We have one more hour to go getting you ready for the conference championship weekend. Colts at Patriots, Packers at Seahawks, the home teams prohibitive favorites, and for good reason. The home teams won in the regular season. The Seahawks by 20. The Patriots by 22. Will it be any different on Sunday?
When you get a Honda Civic.
Probably not. We'll be back with more. This is PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.
NFL season is reaching its pinnacle. It's the biggest game on earth. Two teams, one trophy, one moment in time.
It's a good snap, a good hold. The kick is on its way, end over end, and it is good!
It's where legends are born and history is made.
Looking for Jones, he's got it at the 20, and he'll walk in for the touchdown!
We'll take you inside the stories, give you access to the game's biggest stars, and bring you all your NFL breaking news. Because the road to Arizona goes through NBC Sports Radio, and we'll be there every day, all day.
And off to the races, to the 30, to the 20, to the 10, touchdown!
Follow online or with the NBC Sports Radio app 24/7. We are NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. And we live for the NFL.
We had a future Hall of Famer on the program earlier in the week. That was Terrell Owens, so why not wrap the week up with a current Hall of Famer? Multiple different NFL teams, from the Oilers to the Vikings to the Seahawks to the Chiefs. Several years in Edmonton, over 70,000 total passing yards in his pro football career. Currently the Keller commentator on the Seahawks radio network. It's Warren Moon. Warren, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you? It's safe to say my arm is just a little bit tired. A lot of throws.
Yeah, I'd say 70,000 yards. We've got to figure out the mileage on that. That is one heck of a career. Congratulations on all the success. And now you work with the Seahawks. You see them every week. And the season is going to continue where it started. Way back in week one, it was Packers at Seahawks. Now the Packers come back. In hindsight, how bad of an idea was it for the Packers to completely avoid Richard Sherman's side of the field?
I thought it was a terrible move, especially for not only is very, very accurate with the football, but he's very safe with the football, and he knows whether he can throw a ball over there or not. If he doesn't see or think his receiver's open, then you come off of it to somebody else. But to just totally just disregard that side of the field, I thought it did an injustice to their defense. I mean, to their offense, and it really just played right into the Seahawks' hands. They knew that they could pretty much have to just defend one side of the football field, and it really played in their hands of shutting down a really good offense.
Yeah, different game plan for sure this time around, but different circumstances. Aaron Rodgers with the calf injury. How are the Seahawks preparing to face Aaron Rodgers given the likelihood of limited mobility?
Yeah, I don't know which is an advantage. Take the advantage of, okay, we're going to try and work the whole field now, but now our quarterback doesn't have, you know, the gifts that he usually has, which is being able to have that mobility to get outside the pocket and create and make things happen with his arm and his leg. So I think the Seahawks would probably take that exchange that, okay, you are going to go after our best corner, that's fine, but we'll take a hobble to Aaron Rodgers anytime over a healthy Aaron Rodgers. And I think it's really going to it's going to hamper them some, because that's what makes him special, to be able to get away from pass rushes and be able to make things happen on the outside. And the Seahawks have a very, very fast pass rush. They really get after the quarterback quick. They don't always make a lot of sacks, but they definitely force quarterbacks to throw the ball before they want to, and they also get good hits on the quarterback, and they make the quarterback have to move. And if Aaron can't move the way he's used to, it's going to be a disadvantage for the Green Bay Packers offense.
He's Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon now with the Seahawks Radio Network. You've seen this team all year long, preseason, regular season, postseason. Who's more important to the offense, Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch?
Wow, that's a great question. This team is so balanced. They're 50-50 pass and run, a little bit more run than pass. Marshawn is the one that kind of is the identity of this offense. He's the one that kind of gets them going, gets the running game established so Russell Wilson can do the things that he does as a passer. And then he has that special creative ability to get outside the pocket and make things happen a la Aaron Rodgers. So they're both equally as important, but there's no question that Marshawn is the one he's the guy that makes this offense go and gives it that physical mentality that they're looking for.
There was some odd stuff in the middle of the season. The Seahawks encountered some adversity. Percy Harvin was traded. Reports suggest here they got through all that. There's a positive vibe now. Do you think Lynch will return in 2015?
I think it all depends on his health, Mike. He's a guy that's had a lot of back problems, back spasms. There's talk that he might have a disc problem in his back. So I'm sure he'll have to look at that in the offseason and see what his health is like. And as we know in the NFL, historically, running backs, when they get to that age of around 29, 30 years old, their productivity starts to decrease. So we'll just have to wait and see how those talks go in the offseason. But right now, the Seahawks would love to have Marshawn Lynch back based off of how he's playing right now, but we don't know what's going to happen into the future.
He's Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon of the Seahawks Radio Network. And I've been trying, Warren, with both of these games this weekend to try to find a way to believe in the underdog. I don't see it happening for the Green Bay Packers. What has to occur for the Packers to pull what would be one of the biggest upsets in NFC title game history?
Well, first of all, they've got to run the ball well against the Seahawks. And the teams that have beat the Seahawks this year have run the ball for about 140 yards a game. All the other games that they've won, they've only averaged about 68 yards. So you've got to be able to run it, because you can't throw the ball successfully all day against this secondary. They're too good. They're too talented. And then I think you have to create some turnovers. Seahawks don't turn the football over very much, one of the least turnover teams in the league. You got to create some turnovers and some short fields for your offense, because you're not going to be able to go 70, 80 yards against this defense consistently. And then you've got to take very good care of the ball yourself. You can't turn the ball over to this defense. So those are the things I think that have to happen for Green Bay to come in here and win. Can they do that? We'll just have to wait and see. But I think they're capable of doing that.
Last couple minutes with Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. And every year as the draft approaches, you've got some insightful takes on the quarterbacks entering the NFL. This year, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, top of the stack. Any early views on either of those guys?
Well, Jameis Winston, I think, is definitely a guy that has all the abilities and comes out of the type of offense where he would make the transition a little bit easier. He's got the character questions, of course, that we're going to have to get answered over the next few months as they go through the draft process. And he's going to have to really give people a lot of confidence that he's going to get past these things and become a mature young adult that they're looking for to lead their football team. Because he's going to be asked to play very early in his career as a high-round draft pick. Marcus Mariota has everything that you're asking for in a quarterback, except for he comes out of an offense that I kind of question whether it translates well into the NFL. So he's going to have to show me that he can, first of all, take a snap from center, that he can drop back and do all the different footwork that it takes coming away from center, and then throw the ball in small windows and things that he never had to do in college. But as far as his ability, his physical ability, as far as his character, his work ethic, all those things are top-notch. So they both have questions on both sides, but I think they both can be great players if they can just adjust those few little flaws in their games or in their character.
He's Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. One concern I have, last year Johnny Manziel, I think, pulled off the Eddie Haskell routine with the Cleveland Browns, all about football, going to do all the right things, and then the moment he's drafted, it all changed. I feel like that's going to subject Jameis Winston to even more scrutiny. They're going to try even harder to cut through the packaging from the agents. How rough do you think it's going to be on Jameis Winston as the teams try to get to the bottom of his character?
Well, they should be rough on him because he hasn't shown that that he can be a mature young man right now with some of the things that he's done in his past. So they should be as rough as they possibly can, and they should do as much background work on his character and talk to as many different people as they possibly can about, you know, just what type of kid he is. From the people that I've talked to, I've heard he's a really good kid and he's a really good teammate. He just has done some very immature things, and I think that happens sometimes with 19-year-olds, but you have to hope that this doesn't become a pattern as he moves forward in his life, and that's the big question that has to be answered.
Last one for Hall of Famer Warren Moon. Did Cardell Jones, the Ohio State quarterback, make the right decision?
You know, the only thing I thought is maybe he should transfer to another school and stay in school so he can get more repetitions, more experience playing football. Going back to school, I thought, was the right move for him. Staying at Ohio State, now he's going to have to compete against two other guys unless one of those guys leaves school. But we'll have to wait and see how much playing time he gets staying at Ohio State. I would have probably went somewhere else and made my own name for myself coming out of another institution. But the great thing is he's going back to school. He's going to continue to get his education. He wants to graduate, which is outstanding, and hopefully he'll get a chance to play more on the football field.
Hey, Warren, great stuff. Thanks for some of your time. Maybe we'll see you down in Arizona.
Okay, Mike, take care, my man. Thank you.
Great games coming up, hopefully. Maybe not. See you Monday. Have a good one.